Reading from the Brihadbhagavatamrita, Volume 1, Chapter 7, Text 153. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kevalam Paramam Dainyam Avilam Vyasya Sikshaya. Sriman Madana Gopala Charanabjam Upasata. Entering a mood of great and single-minded humility, they began worshipping the lotus feet of Sriman Madan Gopal according to Narada's instructions. Commentary. It is an axiomatic principle of It's an axiomatic principle of devotional service that until one rejects everything insubstantial, one cannot grasp the essence of reality. The sages at Prayag, graced by Narada, with ultimate enlightenment, now obtained the total humility, dainya, required for entrance into the mysteries of prema bhakti. By honestly thinking themselves unworthy of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lotus feet, they earn the priceless treasure of his favor. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Mritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Varagya Yug Bhakti Risam Piyatnai Apayama Manabipsamandam Pambuhiya Paraduka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhamasayami Pancha Kalpa Tarugyascha Vipashindu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from New Jersey. Really had a wonderful program yesterday. Myself and Lakshmi Nisringa on it was Balaram Purnima, and at the same time it was Julian Yatra. So he spoke on Balaram, and I spoke on Julian Yatra, basically Radharani. And I liked it. It was 11 o'clock program. It makes so much more sense. As Kulpa Viksha told me, he had to leave. He said, "Yeah, when you have an evening program, you've already ruined your whole day. Starts off so nice, more mode of goodness." That was really wonderful. So, Narada, got his benedictions to share this very, very deep concept of spiritual life. Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it's the essence because it's the original personality of Godhead. Now, what does original personality of Godhead mean? There's other manifestations of Godhead. It's the same person. But original means fully manifest. It's almost like, again, you know, you're at home, you're yourself, you go outside, you have other relationships. Those relationships are secondary, and you manifest a particular side of yourself according to that relationship. And the classic example Srila Prabhupada gives is the high court judge. And he has relationships in the court, so he assumes some airs. It's not the full original judge. So the full original Supreme Personality of Godhead is Kishore Krishna. And in Narada's search, he found, looking for the devotees who are the topmost recipients of Krishna's mercy, he found those devotees who have that relationship to be the deepest in their revelation and understanding of God. And therefore the Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the Bhagavatam, because this is the essence of the Bhagavatam as we've been following the story. It's Maharaj Prickett at the end of his life summarizing the Bhagavatam for his mother, as he only sees the last day of his life. He doesn't have 7 days to repeat it again. So he summarizes it. And it's very interesting. The conception of summary is not narrative, it's theme. In other words, they look more to communicate the message than to replicate its form. And this is the essence of realization. Is to give the message in whatever form is suitable for the understanding of your audience. And again, that tension that exists with communicating in a way in which we don't skew or compromise the message, and at the same time communicating in such a way in which the message will not be lost. But anyway, it's clear what the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is promoting. Ete chamsa kalapumsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam. So Narada wants to distribute that, and lo and behold, what does he do? He goes back to where he originally began his journey and shares that with the sages as Kumbh Mela, which is quite significant. These are elevated personalities. But even though they're elevated personalities, accomplished spiritualists, he gives them this. And now the end of the book, I still don't think we'll finish today, this week, maybe next week. The end of the book is really going to hit this message home in a very, very powerful way. Basically saying that this is where it's at. To somehow or other come in tune with this conception of divinity and to relish this conception of divinity, which will give you access to an understanding of all conceptions of divinity. Once you get to the original person, you can understand all the other forms that person takes. So he's come back to the sages, and he touched their hearts. And they became attracted to this, because this is really the nature of a Vaishnava. This is so important. The nature of a Vaishnava is sada sangrahina. They can grasp essential values. Sada grahi. They grasp the essential values. Not liberal. It's not conservative. Not right wing. It's not left wing. It's not institutional. It's not non-institutional. It's objective experience of the absolute reality, independent of any preconceived prejudice or conditioning. They hone in. And we see how, even in our own lives, we can miss the mark, where it's niyamagraha, where we accept things simply on the basis that it's a rule or a ritual or a creed, even if it doesn't serve the mission of the truth. Or we become too lax in following the principles and rules, no matter how challenging they may be, that keep us on the path of the truth. So he comes back to these sages who are sara, saragrahi, and they immediately grasp it, and they take to it without any doubt. Without any inhibition, without any attachment. So many things can prevent us from accepting the truth. One is what the truth may do. How the truth may judge the attachments we hold. There are so many things. And the attachments can be for attachment or detachment that we hold. And then they entered, as it said here, a kevalam, paramam dhanya, kevalam, exclusive. They've got the essence now. They're not compromising in terms of the essence. Anything that is anartha does not have value to their objective or goal, to their relationship with God. And they enter this mood of humility, which is, here it's equated directly with prema. We're talking, Mahamuni, about these types of correlations between morality, values, principles, and bhakti. Here there's an absolute correlation here between that mood of humility and your experience of mercy. And your consequent experience of love and devotion for the giver of that affection or love. It's an absolute card. They go up together. Even there's that verse, Parashanubhava, Bhakti Rakti, is that how in Bhakti, detachment, realization, and devotion, they all rise at the same time. Just like when you're eating, the pleasure you get from the food, the satisfaction you feel in your body, and the relief of hunger, they go at the same pace. So same thing with bhakti. If the bhakti is so high, but the detachment is so low, you have to check the pulse of sentimentalism and sahajiyism. But if the detachment is so high and the devotion is not commensurate, then you have to check the pulse of impersonalism, dryness. Anyway, they have this utter single-pointed mood of humility. It pervades their consciousness. It's a mood of great and single-minded humility. It means it's not an intellectual conception. It's not looking simply through the intelligence, in one sense. I should do this. This is embedded deeply within their mind. It's a deep reflection of the soul in the mind. And the soul is a particle of consciousness that's fully aware of its insignificance in relationship to the supreme consciousness, which is not a bar to its feelings of incredible devotion. In fact, it's increasing their devotion because their awareness, they're aware of the greatness of God or their relationship with God, or the greatness of God in terms of the sweetness of God, or the greatness of God in terms of the opulence of God. You're aware. You have self-awareness. Of course, in bhakti, it's God realization, and that God realization leads to self-realization. But you're fully aware of that. You're not in this egotistical bubble that the whole universe exists within my brain and my desires. But you see yourself very happily in the world of God, in the world of Krishna. And that mood, which is a warmth that pervades one's body, creates such a sense of unworthiness. But the unworthiness is based not on a self-degradation of the self. The unworthiness is based on the value of what you're getting in relationship to the self. You're humbled. It's just like if, you know, you go outside and someone says, you know, I very much admire you and I'd like to help you. And they give you $100. Then you feel, well, that's nice. They give you $1,000. Wow, that's really nice. They give you $1,000,000. Well, I don't deserve this. They give you $5,000,000. You even feel less deserving. So it creates that sense within the consciousness. So here they're getting prema, and they're feeling God's mercy. And what could be better than feeling the mercy of God? There's nothing better than feeling the mercy of God. Now, Rikshit turns to his mother and sums up, this is the lessons that you should learn from this story. Matar gopa kishoram tam tvam chara sarasa buddham tat prema mohitabhi shri gopi vir abhito britam amusham dasyam ichanti tadrusha prema bhangibi nityam bhajashvatam nama sankirtam parayana. Dear Mother, you as well should always worship this young cowherd boy. He is the ocean that yields the nectar of the rasa dance, in which divine gopis fully surround him, entranced by pure love. You should cherish the desire to be the servant of these gopis. You should constantly worship him in pure love as they did, and you should dedicate yourself to the Sankirtan of his names. So this is the treasure that Prabhupada has given in the Gaudiya Vaishnav line commentary. Having finished his story, Rikshit Maharaj summing up the lesson his mother should learn from it. She ought to absorb herself fully in Krishna consciousness, which in all of its countless varieties derives from and reflects the most perfect love of the gopis. I'm going to read this again. Having finished his story, Rikshit Maharaj is summing up the lessons his mother should learn from it. She ought to absorb herself fully in Krishna consciousness, which in all its varieties derives from and reflects the most perfect love of the gopis who join Krishna in his rasa dance. Very interesting. The countless varieties of love reflect this love. Now, it'll be explained. God in his original form is a young, playful cowherd, and this form he enjoys his original pleasure. When the Supreme Lord appears in any other form, that appearance is secondary, manifest to satisfy particular devotees. After hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, Parikshit understood this transcendental fact. To make his mother also understand that he has recounted this first part of the Srimad Bibriyat Bhagavatam. It's saying the Bhagavatam is to present this. There are 9 cantos to present the 10th canto, and within the 10th canto, the pastimes of Krishna, create a frame of reference for us to understand Krishna's most intimate side. And understanding Krishna's most intimate side, you understand the original, full manifestation of Godhead and the essence of his sweetness that flows from his person and the essence of the prema that flows to his person. Perhaps Mother Uttara, the widow of Krishna's nephew, might feel uncomfortable assuming the mood of the gopis, at least in public. Therefore, Pariksit advises her more aptly to strive to become a servant of the gopis. As Pariksit here points out, the principal method for becoming a servant of the gopis of Vrindavan is Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Immersing oneself in hearing and chanting the names of the divine cowherd boy of Braja, especially the name of Krishna. This is the best means to practicing worshiping him in pure love and is the symptom of one who has achieved the treasure of prema. So Nam Kirtan is the method and it's also the symptom. You chant Hare Krishna to attain Braja Bhakti and direct service to the divine couple. And when you have that love, out of love, you chant the names. So the name goes from the sadhana to the sadhya. It goes to the cause, to the effect. You chant to get love, and when you have love, the symptom is you will chant and glorify Krishna. So, this is what the Brihad Bhagavatamrita presents, basically. It presents the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. He's the one with the fullest love. And one who has the fullest love experiences the mercy of the fullest revelation of the divinity. And the process is this Nam Sankirtan is the most effective. Gopinam mahina kaschitta same gopasakyate namaya swamukhe kartum merur makshikayayata. I cannot describe with my own words even one of the glories of the gopis any more than a mosquito can swallow Mount Meru. What a beautiful analogy. A mosquito even trying to swallow an elephant. What to speak of swallowing Mount Meru. So such a nice glorification of the mood of and philosophy of Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami. He feels limited in expressing and understanding the unlimited. And when one is experiencing that type of mercy, it's just overwhelming. But at the same time, one feels it's just a drop. It's a quality of an ocean of ecstatic love. So you feel the effects of the ocean, but by no means do you feel the breadth of the ocean or the depth of the ocean. So the glories of Krishna is like that. The experience of those glories, not just an intellectual conception, but to feel those glories. To feel that energy, to bathe in that energy, and just know that what you're feeling, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, the ocean of ecstatic, what you're feeling is just a drop of the infinite personality of Godhead, who is simply composed of that Sarup Shakti, that internal potency. which has the essence of the bliss potency. So the drop has the qualities of the ocean, but the ocean also has so much more. So a drop of prema bhakti has the qualities of the ocean of prema bhakti. It's overwhelming in the consciousness, but there's so much more. Aho Krishna rasa bhishta sadana mami kirtaye Krishna siyatat priyanam cha vaishmyadinam guru mama. Oh, but my spiritual master is fully absorbed in the loving moods of serving Krishna. He can constantly glorify Krishna's names and those of Rukmini and Krishna's other beloved. Gopinam vita bhutas sputatara premanal archischita. The gopis were consumed by the expansive flames of the wondrous blazing fire of love for Krishna. If my guru chants the names of these gopis and recalls a gopi's distinguishing qualities, he too is touched by sparks shooting forth from the flames of this intense fire, and he at once becomes greatly agitated. Therefore, he has to avoid pronouncing the gopis' names. Now, at the... So who's his guru? Marge Prickett is talking. Who's his guru? He's talking about Sukadeva Goswami. And Sukadeva Goswami is the parent of Radharani, manifest in Krishna Leela. So the concept, the idea is, he has this mood. And the spark shooting forth from the flame of this intense fire has too much of an effect on him, and he can't continue. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it gives very interesting descriptions of various types of perfected spiritual psychologies. I remember two, unless I review it, I won't remember them all, but they're interesting. One is the pebble in the pond mind, and one is the mountain in the ocean mind. The pebble in the pond mind is the pebble, when you throw it in the pond, it creates visible ripples. So some pure soul, he may have a mind in that regard, that any little connection will be visibly and powerfully manifest. And then there's the mountain in the ocean mind, the volcano in the ocean. The volcano in the ocean may explode, but you may not even see the ripples. So we can look at various spiritual personalities like that. You may have to contain their ecstasies, and some who can't. Commentary, the gopis' love for Krishna is unique. It reaches the ultimate extremes of ecstatic intensity, and so it can be compared to a blazing fire. Yeah. Everything the gopis experience in their lives shines with the light of their Krishna prema, and the flame-like ecstasies from their prema burns their hearts, as flames burn a person who comes too close. Sukadeva Goswami is intimately attuned to the mood of the gopis, and therefore he is vulnerable in the danger of becoming too ecstatic. In the helpless state of viraha bhav, he might sometimes become incoherent in chanting the glories of the Lord. The devotional practice that is his own specialty and the only support of his vital force. If Sukadev utters any of Gopi's names, his heart is at once filled with remembrance of the Gopis. And the scorch of the flames, the Vraha Bhav, make him unable to concentrate on his service. Therefore, while reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Prickett, he avoided mentioning the Gopis by name. Many times in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Sukadev speaks of the activities and ecstasies, but not the names of the individual Gopis. It is interesting because in other Puranas, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are mentioned, and even the name of Radharani is mentioned. So it's interesting. Bhagavatam doesn't mention her name directly and doesn't mention the names of the gopis directly, where they are mentioned in other scriptures. Not to the extent, at least the pastimes are not to the extent and depth and poetic style of the Bhagavatam. So now there's going to be all kinds of verses where it's actually a very nice summary of the Rasa dance. It goes through the Rasa dance and mentioning how it mentions, not by name, but by individual gopis. The Rasa dance is such a beautiful pastime in five chapters, which is really a story, at least in our tradition, that clearly exemplifies Srimati Radharani, Sri Radha, as the full capacity to please Krishna. Let's speak about this next Tuesday, but I've been studying Radha Tattva. And it's very interesting how three qualities are intertwined in the perfection of Shakti. One is, and Radharani, and according to the CC, is the Purna Shakti. And Shakti is energy. And energy emanates from a source for the service of the source. In a practical way, we can just see our own energies there to serve us. We develop energies, we emanate energies to serve us. Jnana, Bala, Priya. We have knowledge, we have strength, we have activities. Different energies come to serve us. So the essence of energy is to serve or to please. And the concept of rasa is that there's an energy moving from the divine with a consciousness which is consciously moving for the pleasure of the divine. I described also that this was Vyasadeva's vision when he wanted because what is the Vedas? The Vedas, at least in terms of the story of the Bhagavatam, it's knowledge. And it contains comprehensive knowledge of what? Of reality. So when Vyasadeva was not satisfied even after editing or compiling the Vedas, which was coming down in oral tradition, which is very, very vast, then summarizing its philosophy and story form, the term of Mahabharata, and then codifying the knowledge. And when it was confirmed by his Guru Maharaj that he didn't quite do the proper job. Now, he did an amazing thing. But to really communicate the Vedas in the deepest and most accessible way, he had to increase his realization. I'm feeling that challenge now. I'm giving this talk on Sri Radha, and I know there's going to be many new people there. And I know to be able to communicate it, it's going to be a test of the depth of my realization of the subject. That's the primary thing in communication. You don't have that depth of realization of your subject, you won't be able to bridge the gap between the knowledge that you have and the ability of your audience to comprehend it. So Vyas needed deeper realization. So Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Pranayate Malay. He began to meditate without any distraction on Krishna. Now, I don't know if he was doing the name, the form, the qualities of the pastime, but probably he was just taking shelter of form or the name, trying to understand more deeply the qualities and the pastimes. But after that determined effort for his guru, as in a mood of service, Pashyat Purusham, he saw the personality of Godhead, Maya Chittad Apastayam. And he saw Maya under his control. He saw that this Supreme Person was not a product of any modes. But he saw something else. He saw all the Maya, or all the energy, the Mahamaya, the Yogamaya. And what he saw is that the absolute reality was this exchange between God and his energies, which was an exchange of love. That's what ultimately existed. The Shakti Shakti Man is an exchange of love, and that's what exists in the ultimate reality. And self-realization means to attune ourselves to that. The way we attune ourselves to that is by understanding Radha and Krishna, which perfectly exemplify that ultimate reality. And that's how you enter into that ultimate reality. There's going to be some beautiful purports coming up later in this, maybe I even go ahead, how that's explained. This is so beautiful. This Shastra, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, declares throughout that pure devotional service to Krishna can be realized only by one who has specific knowledge of both the personality of God and the process of bhakti. Nonetheless, when one has learned the glories of the gopis, the greatest of all the Lord's devotees, one will automatically understand the Lord and his devotional service without any other effort. So it's a real understanding, a revelation, that to properly enter into the depths of these pastimes with the proper understanding reveals to you what ultimate reality is. according to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. If you're in this path, that's what that ultimate reality is. The energy and the energetic source, it's an exchange. It's a play. It's a lila. It's a rasa. And it's ultimate pleasure. And that's what's going on. And when you realize that, understand it, and then you enter it. So now there'll be how he couldn't mention the names because he was feeling that energy, which is extreme bliss. He couldn't contain himself. So now it goes through that rasa lila, and how, and it's nice in the purports that are given. It gives verses from different parts of the drama. Krishna blows his flute, which reveals his heart, and it attracts the gopis who are at the level of wanting to enter into that eternal reality, which is the highest interest. So therefore, they leave everything for it. That's what the highest level of self-realization entails. Of course, you don't have to necessarily leave the activities, but certainly the consciousness has changed, and when they leave the activities also, they merge into that love. And they're allured or they're attracted. And then it plays out as this manifestation of Shakti and Shaktiman, the energy, the possessive energy, exchanging love. And you get the concept of the ultimate reality as these bhavas, these ecstatic bhavas that create this height of this love. All the while, warning, don't try to understand this. Don't try to make the ultimate judgment of this your own experience of these forms, because it's really something different. Okay, so what we're going to have next Sunday, coming attractions, we'll go through these verses, we'll probably end it, and it'll give me an opportunity to tell the story of the Rasa Dance. Because that's what's going to, those chapters. So we'll give a summary of the Rasa Lila. And that's what these purports are coming up. And then we finish the thing. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
If I may, I do have two questions.
Okay.
The first is, you had said that the other secondary forms that Krishna manifests, he manifests those to satisfy those devotees who like to love him in that way, let's say, or in reverence or whatever.
Yeah.
But so the implication for me was that, well, possibly his original form he does for himself, but he is known to be, you know, selfless. Completely selfless. Everything he does is for his devotees. So his original form is that. Everything he does is for his devotees, because he is you know, the supremely selfless person, you know. And so his original form, is he doing it for himself, or is he doing it, or is he manifesting that form for his devotees primarily?
Wow. That's the first question? Or is
yeah.
more?
No, I mean, that's, the first, that's my first question.
That's the first question. Well, he has devotees who love him in that regard. But God's interest is not selfish because it's the interest of everyone. And no one else can say that unless they're linked with God's interest. Because we're all part of God. So, and it's individually the interest of people who love him in that relationship. So he's functioning on that platform. These devotees love him in a very, very Gail, is that your phone or what's going on?
No, I don't know where that's coming from.
Okay. One second, I'm gonna do the mute unmute thing. One second. Okay. What I would say is, when God does for himself, he does for everyone. When we do for ourselves, we may be doing it for God, or we may be just being selfish. So when God does for himself, he does for everyone. But at the same time, within those leelas or pastimes, there are intimate devotees. So he's also manifesting that way for them. But the manifestation for them is his full self, because that's the relationship they have. Anything more? Next question. Did I lose you, Gail?
Oh, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Whoa.
Wow.
Can people hear me, Gail?
Yeah, I can hear you and a whole lot of other stuff.
Okay, I'm going to try one more thing. Gail, can I hear you now? Can you hear? Speak? Okay, one second. Gail? Calling Gail?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hello? Oh, my God.
I will, Gail?
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Gail, can you hear me? Hello, Gail? Anybody like to say hello?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, okay. Okay.
Okay.
I think we're good now.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, really quickly, I was going to ask You said that understanding Krishna's original form enables us to understand his other forms. Can you expand on that, please? Like, give some examples of how...
Well, the analogy I gave is that when you understand the source, then you understand the transformation of the source. And I guess the example is a person. If you understand them intimately, then you can understand even more deeply who he is as the judge, who he is as the friend. You can understand, when you understand the intimate side of a person, you can understand all other aspects. But if you don't understand the intimate side, you can't understand all aspects. Even to the extent that, you know, the mother cannot understand the conjugal aspect of the son. But the lover can understand, has access to understand, oh, that's the mother's love, that's the friend's love, that's the different types of love. But there's no access to the deeper sense. So I guess when you get down to the most inclusive type of devotion and love, it has the aspects of all the other loves. The lover can also be parental, the lover can be friends, the lover can be a servant, the lover can be a fan, or appreciate. So that's the concept, that if you have the understanding of the intimate side, you have access to others.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I'm on a roll, Gail. Okay. People who are new to this, they don't know that you've attended, over 600 Sangha classes, or to speak of the numerous other classes. So there's a lot of frame of reference in our jokes. Okay, anybody else like to say hello or ask a question?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Gordon Bhaktadas.
Okay, Haribo. Great to see you and your whole family yesterday. That was really nice. Thank you. And for doing so much service and making all that wonderful prasadam. It's really a wonderful function. Great.
Thank
Anybody
you,
else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Kumar.
Thank you, Kumar. Great. You're also our regular now. Wonderful. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances.
My separation from Nanda Dulal and Sita, your wife. Yours. Thank, at least you're on the Sanghas. yesterday at the program that I did at the Gopki Shores,
yes,
it was so nice. I wasn't even, I was doing a program with Lakshmi, I was doing a program with Lakshmi and Shringi, and the congregation of devotees that were there, all the people, and then Jai Dwaita Maharaj came.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he just happened to come. And then Brahma Muhurta's daughter, Mangalarti and Brahma Horse's daughter, she's like, seven or something. She asked a question at the end of the class, which I call a stump the guru question. She asked, how come Radharani doesn't have any children? So I looked at Jai Advaita Maharaj, and he said, because she knows there's so much trouble. Anyway. Okay, what can I say? It's okay. It's a bob. It's a rasa. It adds to the whole thing. Okay. Anyway, maybe.
Thank you.
Grihasthas don't laugh at those jokes. I don't know. Okay. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay. No one else can unmute their phone easily. It was great. Let's continue this.
Hi, Bo,
Maharaj. Shastra G. Hi, Bo.
Hi.
We'll definitely see you next month, right? That's for sure.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Hi, Bo. Glory to Robin. Anybody else? Okay, bunch of culprits are just on them.